Carolyn Hillman. Welcome to a special edition of Cross Currents. During this special run of Cross Currents, I'll be speaking to the executive directors and presidents of all the major institutions in the Aspen area. The Aspen Music Festival and School, the Aspen Institute, Aspen Art Museum, ACES, and the Aspen Skiing Company. Coming up on today's show, the CEO of Aspen Center for Environmental Studies, or ACES, Chris Lane. Chris joined ACES as Chief Executive Officer in 2012 and is responsible for all ACES operations. What I know about you, Chris, is that you started, I think that you were the first, and I don't know what the title was at the time, but it's what Auden Schendler is today, the Director of Sustainability.
Correct.
I might be wrong about that title, but when you did that job, what was the title then? And explain what that was for SkiCo.
That was in the 90s, and that was Environmental Affairs Director, back when the ski industry had never had an environmental person. So no one really knew what to call the position. I think I came up with that title to capture as broad a scope as you could. Years later, it's morphed to Sustainability Vice President now, is what Auden is, Vice President of Sustainability, which is a more progressive thought on the environmental movement, that it's not just about preventing pollution, but it's about actually being sustainable, looking forward into the future. So that's what the job has become. And that's what the industry, I'd say, all corporate environmentalism has become corporate sustainability, looking forward, not just looking back, and trying to heal instead of prevent harm.
And you, in that role, were a vanguard of that idea, really.
Well, we were, and I was, and I say that with as much humility as possible, because we were applying, doing all kinds of what was back then really progressive stuff. And if you think of the tone of that day, it wasn't long after I started my job, a year or two, that the Vail restaurant on top of Vail burned down.
The eco-terrorism.
And the eco-terrorism occurred. And the guys that destroyed the Humvees in California because they thought they were bad, and they are bad for the environment, but you know, the environmental movement would never condone eco-terrorism under any circumstance. So I was, we were in a little mini 60s revolution kind of going on, certainly in the travel and tourism industry, but I think in corporate America as well, that corporations didn't get it, that government wasn't going to solve all the problems, and that corporations had to solve a lot of these problems. They had the resources to do it, and they always use the old analogy of take the top 100 biggest entities on earth, 50 of them are countries and 50 of them are corporations. It reads China, United States, Walmart, Google, Amazon, Russia, Indonesia. You know, that's what the list sounds like. So that was a big awakening, I think, for corporate America. And I happened to be in the right place at the right time for that.
Kind of Edward Abbey redux.
That would be too complimentary, but yes, I get your point. And then I ended up leaving Aspen Skiing Company for another similar job that was just bigger, more.
And did you have a hand in creating that? And that was a national park concessionaire organization, Zanterra.
A company, Zanterra Parks and Resorts, now called the Zanterra Travel Collection. But they were a much larger corporate company and with influence nationally. And of course, when I got a taste of that and thought, okay, I could do what I'm doing at Aspen Skiing Company, to reduce environmental harm, to think forward thinking on sustainability issues and take that at a national level. And that was an easy decision for me.
Were they informed by Aspen Skiing Company in creating that position, or did it exist before then? And how did that work?
They were. It's interesting that the CEO that hired me attended one of my presentations on Aspen Skiing Company at a conference in Snowmass. And he saw the presentation and said, I need a guy like that.
Or I want that guy.
Yeah. And then he ended up saying, I want that guy. That's exactly what he said. So he calls me 2 weeks later, and next thing you know, I'm moving to Denver and changing my entire life. But yeah, that company runs concessions in national parks, everything from Yellowstone to Grand Canyon, you know, across the country, but also private resorts and state parks. So they've got train sets, cruise ships, state parks, national parks, private resorts on the East Coast, the West Coast, Vermont bicycle tours going off into Europe. So it was fascinating and a great, great, great job, a job I loved to death, to the point where it almost killed me. And it was like, okay, I'm going to save my marriage and be a good father and take a step back from being gone, because that's a job that required a lot of travel. I was gone all the time.
And that led to your return to Aspen.
That did. And that actually my, and you know my wife, Diana, she wasn't happy in Denver and she wanted to move back anyway. So I actually moved back to Basalt before I left that job. So
you were commuting?
I was commuting. And that made travel even harder. And I just had two small kids and I didn't want to be that dad who was gone all the time. Absolutely loved the job, but couldn't try. I traveled 3 weeks a month for 12 years.
Wow.
So that's rough, right? It's rough physically on you as well, just to physically travel, you know, leave on a Monday, give it back on a Friday kind of thing. It was rough. And when I was single I was married, but when I didn't have kids, it was a lot easier. But
yeah, sure.
Know, once you have the kids, it's like, I want to be a dad. So
this job now, now you're CEO of Aces. It seems like it's just tailor-made for you.
It's a great job. I'm extremely happy. The organization is, as you know, one of the kind of iconic organizations of Aspen. And, you know, we always think, and we look at our history, Elizabeth Pepka helped found the Aspen Institute, the Aspen Music Festival, and ACES. So, and you look at those three organizations and you think to yourself, okay, those are some organizations that are making a difference in the world and are making a difference in this community. And that's what attracted me to ACES, was the history. And as someone said to me when I was being hired, do you want to be part of this family? And I thought, wow, you just said the words. You just said that part of a family that's bigger than just a job and bigger than a paycheck and bigger than 9 to 5. So that's what attracted me, so I ended up giving up my job at Zantera, and I've been now at Aces for almost 7 years.
And Tom Cardamone had led that organization. He and his wife had been there at the beginning, or that family, mm-hmm. with Pepka, and imagine that must have been a tricky transition for them to that much, I don't know, founder syndrome, if that's fair, or... I'm sure that was difficult. So talk about that a little bit.
You know, Tom Cardamone had been at Aces as the executive director for, I think when I arrived, 40 years, something like that, 42 or 3 years. And his wife, Jody, was the first naturalist director there, and she helped run the organization. And, you know, we consider them founders, you know, with Elizabeth Pepka. They were the first employees. I think, to be honest, I think they hired the right person in hiring me, because I was willing to come in with a split agenda. And the split agenda looks like this. We need to preserve and protect what the work that Tom and Jody had done and Elizabeth Pepka had done.
The legacy.
We had to preserve it. And I was all on board for that. However, we want to move the organization forward into newer pastures. And I was a good fit for that, because I totally get and I fully respect the history and the legacy, and I can live it and breathe it myself. And there's a culture there as well. You know, there's a type of human that can take this job. I have solar panels on my house. I drive an electric car. I bike. I don't eat much meat. I turn electricity off. I live this, like, what some people would laugh at. You know, my wife is telling me how cold our house is because I'm trying to save energy, because I think we shouldn't be emitting as many fossil fuels because the temperature of the planet is increasing because of carbon emissions. That's in my heart and soul, and I love birds more than anything in this world. I love birds. I love to travel. When I go on vacation, it's always a birding vacation. When I go bike ride, it's a birding bike ride. Exactly, and you're laughing because that is true, and that is the culture of ACES. It attracts a kind of person that lives and breathes it. Forget my degrees. I've got an environmental engineering degree. Forget my work experience. You got to be that kind of human to fit in well at ACES. So they found that in me. But I also had this other side of me, which was this corporate sustainability background, which is a little new to the culture of ACES, of, okay, let's be a little more efficient. Let's not be afraid to try new things and move the organization forward in different ways. They brought it a long, long way. And my job was to keep it going that way and then add some.
And which you've done really successfully.
We have done.
Yeah.
We've taken our kids' education program that was in Aspen for 35 years. It's now in Basalt. It's in Carbondale. And we just this year moved to Glenwood Springs, Newcastle, and Rifle. So kids in these 4-day-a-week, you know, they voted against their education, taxing themselves for education, that RE2 district. And we came in to help fill that gap, to give kids ecological literacy, kids that probably would never get it. 4 days, they're in school 4 days a week, and we're down there every day.
You're listening to a special edition of Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Carolyn Heldman. My guest today is Chris Lane. He's the Chief Executive Officer of ACES, the Aspen Center for Environmental Studies. I want to talk about how the mission has evolved. If I know the mission statement maybe hasn't changed.
It did change. We had a long mission statement. If you asked me to recite it, I
what
could
the old
not
one
do
was?
It. I couldn't do it.
Okay.
But that proves my point. The CEO cannot recite the mission statement. I could get close, but it wouldn't come out perfect. So now we've shortened it to educating for environmental responsibility. So whether we're doing kids, adults, lectures, guided nature walks, whatever it is we do, it falls under the guise of educating for environmental responsibility.
Okay, so this is my question about that. I saw on your website that, but you also have learn, restore, and act. And I know you have a letter to the community that accompanied a fundraising appeal. You talk about not being political and not being a political advocacy organization. However, with that word, act, and with everything that's happening in the world today and how urgent it seems like, talk to me about that inherent tension. If there is, maybe I'm making it up. Maybe there isn't tension there.
There isn't tension. Well, there is and there isn't. There is in the fact that we do need people to act, so we need more action. So there's tension that people aren't acting. But there isn't tension where I think you're going, and that is this. We are an apolitical, nonpartisan nonprofit. What that means different than other nonprofits, because if you're a nonprofit, you are allowed to advocate for legislation to a small fraction, depends what kind of nonprofit you are, of your total budget, right? Some nonprofits can use all, but in our case, only a small fraction can go towards supporting legislation or we're violating our nonprofit status. But that doesn't affect us because we have a adamant, and I don't know if I brought this, maybe I brought this to ACES, but I'm adamant about Republicans, Democrats, conservatives, liberals, Muslims, Jews, everyone needs clean air, clean water, clean food, a stable climate. I've yet to see one, I'll just say in this case, Republican, who doesn't think they need clean water, clean food. I've yet to meet one Muslim that doesn't like clean water, clean food. So we believe that those partisan political lines, we abolish them. We think that everyone's united around the environment. The environment should not be a political issue. Now it is. That's the reality. And we do engage during certain times in certain issues. But we believe that you gain more through environmental science and ecological literacy education than you do through partisan fights.
So let me extrapolate from that just that in the education part, teaching respect and values system early on with kids and therefore building a respect and nurturing a care, a desire to protect because they understand it?
I'll say it slightly less simply. I'll give two examples. One is take my son, who obviously is exposed to, I'll never forget the time one of my kids said, What is that smell? I'm like, that's exhaust. Because they've been driving around in my electric car and had not smelled a strong woof of exhaust. And I thought, that's interesting. So my kids, like, think of that we grew up with, like, no seatbelts and lead in the gasoline. Here my kid didn't know what exhaust was. Wow. for a moment. You know, he knew, but he didn't. He'd never had it in his face like that. We drove past the coal mine in the town that I can't think of right
Somerset?
Now. Somerset.
Mysterious town of Somerset.
Exactly. And my son pointed the black rock and said, that's that black rock that you burn and it heats the planet up. This was when he was six.
Wow.
He made that connection. So there's two examples of environmental education changing a kid's life. The other examples I'll give are adults, like everything from Elon Musk to who's the director of Titanic?
James Cameron.
Pope Francis. He named himself after. These are guys. What do those three guys have in common? Completely opposite people. But what they have in common is each one had Elon Musk had a dad with a scientist. James Cameron's goal is to make movies that can change the environment and protect the environment. And he did that with Avatar. And Pope Francis named himself after the Pope of Ecology. and of course is the most progressive, environmentally progressive pope who's talked about climate change we've ever had.
In the encyclical, yeah.
These are examples of ecological literacy and people that are changing the world because they understand that transcends their political movements. One guy's religious, right? One guy's a liberal, and the other guy's, I think, independent. So there's examples of where ecological literacy or environmental science education or awareness wins the day over partisanship.
Okay, let me come at it from another angle. I'm not trying to be provocative. I'm just getting responses to some thoughts that I've had. As we and you as an organization in particular, and many people in this community, fight to preserve the beauty and... there's a lot of organizations that do that also, but it's in your blood to do that. It's in your mission to do that. We become more and more desirable as a place, and yet the desirability of the place becomes a problem with the means and manner in which people come, how they treat or don't the beautiful areas with respect or not. What's the role of preserving something, loving it to death almost? You know, I'm coming about it in a weird way.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to have... I have a great answer, but I don't know that you'll think it's a great answer, and that is this.
Well it doesn't matter what I think.
Because there's two thoughts on it. One is, I want to just give ACES a plug here. When someone visits this area, the ambassadors to this area to try to get people to respect it ecologically are ACES ambassadors. These are, we've got Maroon Bells, Top of Aspen Mountain Snowshoe Tours, the guides at Maroon Bells. We're out in Snowmass this winter. We do guides up Hunter Creek, up Independence Pass. And so these iconic places, and in theory, a lot of these tourists, one of the first people, and we hear this all the time, that they encounter is an ACES naturalist who's trained, who's got a degree, and they do these amazing talks and walks. One side note, we had a guy who was some sort of Saudi prince type person who told us after he went on our nature walk, he'd never stepped off concrete before in his life.
I hope he wrote you a big check.
He did not. I wish he had, but you see what's going on there, right? If you can connect people with nature, the respect will come from that connection. People are starting to get that. Our current president, for instance, to my knowledge, what I've read a lot about him, has no connection to nature whatsoever. He's a guy that's been in New York. He's been in a concrete jungle his whole life. Doesn't understand nature. Doesn't understand how ecosystem services work, how ecology works, where his water and air and clean food come from. So there's a guy, another example in the opposite direction. And then my second part of the answer is, and I worked in the national parks. So we had Zion National Park, for instance, with 4.2 million visitors per year, not one person going off a trail. So we found a way to manage 4 million people, Yellowstone, 5 million people, Grand Canyon, 5 million people. And those parks, while on one hand are embattled to some extent, but you know, they're embattled for different reasons. Air traffic, helicopter viewing, that wasn't us. Native tribe that wants to build a gondola to the bottom of the Grand Canyon, that wasn't us. They're embattled in those respects, but they're not embattled by people simply viewing it and experiencing it. The experience, and I shouldn't give Zantara credit for this, the National Park Service does an excellent job of managing 3 to 5 million people in these parks with very little impact to the resource. The impacts are coming from different areas, but not from the visitor. Now, then you talk about how people get there, because people drive and they fly. And there's no way around the fact that that is fossil fuels. Even if you have a Tesla, you're still, you know, using a grid that's primarily fossil fuel derived. So that has not been solved. But I think Elon Musk is going in the right direction of, you know, once you buy an electric car, and I bought one 7 years ago and I've never gone back, I've had a hybrid since 99, you realize, oh my gosh, they don't malfunction. They don't need maintenance. They work, they're faster. They don't not start because they don't need to warm up. It's a better deal. And I think we can get to a way where we can eventually get to people transporting to national parks around cities, certainly maybe not the trucking industry in the near term, but getting everybody on a grid that's powered with renewables and in electric vehicles that get them there.
You talked about Zion and your at least the National Park Service and how they manage and have successfully managed and
Some would argue with that contention, but
okay. Well, let's just let that lie.
Considering 5 million people, pretty low impact.
Okay.
Per person, anyway.
Pretty low impact is fair.
Yeah.
I'm just curious about your personal opinion on signage in the backcountry in our valley. Just
as a general thought.
Yes. I mean. Yeah. Just curious.
I mean, I have two thoughts on that because I don't want to get trapped in because there's wilderness, right?
Yes.
It depends what backcountry you're talking about.
Right.
So there's Forest Service land, there's state land, there's BLM land, there's wilderness designations. So I subscribe to the notion that as you get further away from urban areas, you should have less signage, less human impact, and eventually you get to wilderness. And when you get to wilderness, there should be zero human impact. So yeah, signage in the backcountry should be minimized to the extent possible, but at the same time, you need signage to protect the resource.
And you need some policing, in effect.
You absolutely need
enforcement. Conundrum is wilderness.
And you will need signage. In that case, you'll need signage to some extent. But you can make signage that is biodegradable, that's environmentally preferable, that's not a piece of plastic or a piece of metal that when it degrades is going to fall into a river and just sit there and rot and pollute the river.
Right.
So there are ways to do it. And the Park Service, I'll give them credit again, is really good about that. They're really good at de minimis signage that is appropriate and for the place. And it just depends. So it's hard to answer signage in the backcountry, yes or no. It's a scale and a depending on where you are and what the conditions are. If you made me say yes or no, you need signage to manage the resource. You absolutely do. You have to have that. Otherwise, the dogs will go off leash. The dogs will go off trail. The people will go off trail. The mountain biker will start a new trail. The motorcyclist will start a new trail. The ATV guys, we got new rules with ATVs out there that I say, thank heavens we've now got that. You got to be plated on county roads. So they can't just run amok. And we're not ATVs now, as you know, or anything now.
Right.
All the way from electric bikes to these razors or side-by-sides, they call them, to motorcycles. Yeah, I've seen in my 25 years in this valley, I've seen some major impacts to our resources on our roads in the backcountry. And it's primarily motorized vehicle use.
You're listening to a special edition of Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Carolyn Heldman. My guest today is Chris Lane. He's the Chief Executive Officer of ACES, the Aspen Center for Environmental Studies. Let me ask you about ACES. You talked about the ambassadors and that people's sometimes their first encounter with anybody, a local person, is one of your employees. How many do you have out there?
ACES as a total has about 55 employees. We have about 20 naturalists in the summer and about 11 in the winter. And in the summer, they're at all those places I mentioned. In the winter, they focus a little more on top of Aspen Mountain, Snowmass. In the summer, we're also out at North Star Nature Preserve. I'm forgetting where else we are in the winter, but we're in limited spaces in the winter. And we do snowshoe tours. We do nature walks. And these are our naturalists, we call them. Now, our educators, there's 11 educators, are in the schools up and down the valley.
Are they your employees?
They are our employees.
Okay.
They go, and this is what makes the program truly unique across the country. In fact, I don't think we know of any other program similar where the environmental nonprofit employees come into the schools and teach full-time as educators. We do that. My kids get that at Basalt. Your kids probably went through it in Aspen. We hear that all the time that, oh, I was an ACES kid. I learned about the environment through ACES. And then each class gets naturalist field school field programs, we call them. So they come to either Rock Bottom Ranch, our ranch down in the Mid-Valley, or they come to Hallam Lake and they get to see the eagle and our raptor program. We muck around in the lakes and the ponds. And the kids get actually, it was a donor that said this to me. I was touting how we do this academic standards. We're helping schools meet state academic standards for science, and we're proud of that. And the person looked at me and said, you know, that's great, but what I really care about is get the kids in the mud. I want the kid to come home dirty and to realize that there's nature out there. And as a corporate sustainability guy background, I thought, wow, I didn't realize that was so powerful for some people. And it is. And I think there's something between our generation, Carolyn, and this generation with digital screen time versus green time that the kids are missing now. And we have a thing we said recently with our 50th anniversary is as we thought about what we're going to do and how we're going to handle it, we realized, you know, every nonprofit, whether the Institute or the Music Festival or Aspen Skiing Company, whatever it is, or for profit, we're all linked by one thing, nature. And someone said to us, it didn't come from us, said, you guys are the best story in town because everyone's here for that reason first, and then there are other things second. And it's true. We are the keys to nature to some extent, and we respect that, and we're proud of that, and we hope as our oldest employee now is Jim Kravitz, who's been with us for 20-something years, and he said Jody Cardamone, is that we're the conscience, the environmental conscience of Aspen. And I take that with so much respect, thinking we got to remind everybody we're not miniature golf. We're walking in forest, and that's more fun. We're always looking for ways to get people to Halm Lake, because Halm Lake, we call it Aspen's biggest park. It's a little miniature Serengeti. People can come down there for free, no less, and get a taste of nature. You're going to see fish. You're going to see all kinds of bird species. You might see a bear.
Let me ask you one last question, because I'm framing this in my perspective of legacy here at Aspen Public Radio, and you've had now 6 years there.
Almost seven.
7 years there, and 50th anniversary year. What do you want the legacy to be under your leadership?
I know this. Bigger is not better. I get that. ACES as an organization is more aspirational than it's ever been. We truly believe we can change the world. And we look at things like, I give credit to everyone. The music festival is the best. The Aspen Institute is changing the world. Aspen Skiing Company and their Give a Flake campaign, it really is raising awareness. So, I mean, the culture of Aspen is that we are bold enough to believe we can make a difference in the world. All Aspen people are that way. We just all think that way. And I think ACES really feels that way now. Our board, our staff is so fired up and excited that we can address the problems on a national level even. So I hope my legacy is that we took ACES from a small town nature center to something even bigger than that. And that was great, but even bigger than that. And that is making an effect and a ripple effect in people's lives. Yeah, I hope our legacy is that we went a little bit outside of our boundaries.
It's a lot to be proud of. Congratulations.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me today. I appreciate it.
Chris Lane is the Chief Executive Officer of the Aspen Center for Environmental Studies, or ACES. Lane was previously the Vice President of Sustainability for Xanterra Parks and Resorts, the first Director of Environmental Affairs at Aspen Skiing Company, and Program Director for a Regional Land Conservation Project. This is a special edition of Cross Currents. Join me next week when my guest will be Heidi Zuckerman of the Aspen Art Museum. You can also hear this show again on Sunday at 1:30. Thanks for listening. I'm Carolyn Heldman. Aspen Public Radio, your news, your music, your station.